Welcome back to the Woodbury Report, where we talk with people helping struggling teens and young adults. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. All the interviews in this series can be found at strugglingteens.com. Today is March 3rd, 2016, and we're going to talk about the brain. My guest is Ryan Anderson. Good morning, Ryan. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Lon.
And the topic is Change Your Brain Digitally. Now, Ryan is the therapist at Telos, and he will be the clinical director of Telos U, which will be opening up this summer. He's also an author, a successful author. You get a few book sales, that makes you a success, Navigating the Cyberscape. And so the topic is Change Your Brain Digitally. And when I was in college, the brain was considered developed until the mid-20s, and then it was pretty much firm. Your IQ stayed same, everything stayed same. You had the same brain for the rest of your life. That's changed in the last decade or two in the elasticity of the brain that you talked about, and I think that's what you're talking about. So could you talk about the elasticity? Let's talk about the elasticity and what it means and the implications of that new development in science.
Absolutely. You know, you're absolutely right that before we had this concept that the brain, once it had formed, was kind of concrete and no longer changed. But over the last 5-10 years, we've become to realize that the brain maintains its neuroplasticity or brain plasticity. And when we talk about that, to understand what that means, we have to understand that the brain is a very adaptive organ. Your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences, the choices you make, they actually change the structure and even the function of your brain. And they continue to do that throughout your entire life. So as a result of that, based on the stimulus that you've experienced and how you respond to it, your brain can gain functions and it can lose functions. And in addition to being adaptive, the brain is a very efficient organ. It's designed to take all of its processes and make them as quick and easy as possible so that you can give your conscious thought to other things. So it's designed to respond to patterns in your life, and it adapts itself to the situations you find yourself in most frequently. So therefore, thoughts, feelings, behaviors, processes, functions that we tend to do a lot get heavily wired and reinforced inside the brain. And those that we don't use very often, they get trimmed down. All of this in the interest of sort of neurological efficiency, making our conscious thought easier to do by shoving a lot of things into the unconscious or sort of putting them on autopilot. So as a result of all that, all of the stimulus and all behavior shapes brains. And when these things that are shaping the brain are regular and consistent, they have a very heavy impact on molding the structure and function of human brains.
Now, that's something we would call habits, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, the interesting thing about this is we talk about the brain as being a very, very flexible, very, very plastic organ. But the odd thing is that that very flexible nature, if you repeat it enough, the ruts get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's very flexibility that actually helps create rigidity in our patterns. Now, that can be a good thing when it comes to things like healthy habits, but it can also be a very bad thing because it can make us mindless in the way we make our decisions and in the way we even perceive the world around us.
I've heard a saying along that line of saying, when you get into a rut, it becomes a grave.
That's a good saying, and it very much can be true. Especially when it comes to some of what we see going on with digital technology. You know, one of the things I mentioned is that things that we repeat very often are highly influential on our brains. And that's just the way brains are in general. And the more we're learning about digital technology is that it is especially effective at shaping brains. But if we just go off of the idea of just something that we repeat a lot, well, let's take a minute to kind of recognize how much we use digital technology. For example, the average 8 to 10-year-old spends nearly 8 hours a day with a variety of different digital media. And by the time they become teenagers, they're spending about 11 hours per day. I can't think of anything I'm doing 11 hours per day, but
Yeah,
that's the
not even
average.
sleeping.
No, but boy, I can't remember the last time I slept 11 hours. But the interesting thing also is you take a look at teens. 51% of teens these days say they'd rather communicate digitally than in person, even with their friends. So what they're saying is the majority of their contact is now digital. And we take a look, 87% of young adults who own smartphones say that they are never away from them, day or night. 80% of those same young adults report the first thing they do in the morning is check their smartphones. And to the point where you see 60% of them expressing a belief that smartphones are somehow going to rule every aspect of their future. So we no longer own our digital devices. They seem to own us.
Okay.
To the point where even 3/4 of Americans admit they sleep with their smartphones, and 3% will say they even sleep holding it in their hands.
Well, I know in my case, I'm laying my hand on my smartphone right now. It's right here, right next to me.
Yeah. So one of the things we're recognizing is even if we don't think at all about the specific nature of digital technology to shape us, we're realizing that the sheer repetition of how we interact with it, how it stimulates us, is shaping us significantly because it is such a repetitious part of our daily lives.
Well, now that's something that we need to, it's a fact in society. We need to take, and I've heard upside and downsides of that, and we need to take advantage of that. Is there a way to take this technology and use it to mold the brain in the ways that we want?
Absolutely. There are a lot of ways we can do that. Unfortunately, the ways to do that are not the most common ways of using them, but there are a couple of things that we're seeing. For example, let's talk about video games specifically, mm-hmm. right? So we know that video games are brain-molding machines. They're very, very good at it. And for example, and it's important for us to recognize that not all video games affect brains the same way. For example, we take a look at certain categories of video games like logic games, puzzle games, or what are called platformer games. When we take a look at people who tend to play these games, and especially if they're playing them within reasonable time limits, we notice that these people have a development in what's known as the entorhinal cortex, that it becomes larger, it becomes more connected. Now, that entorhinal cortex is the part of the brain that helps with evaluating things like cause and effect and contextual learning and some of our perceptual reasoning. So those are useful functions inside the brain. So we find that using those three categories of games actually seems to help develop that. Whereas on the other hand, people who play role-playing games such as World of Warcraft and action games like first-person shooters, those people show diminished entorhinal cortex areas. And so we see that as they're doing that, their brain is beginning to lose its ability to evaluate cause and effect, to learn contextually, and have accurate perceptual reasoning. So one of the things we talk about is first of all, boy, we'll talk about time limits if we have time. Time limits are important, but also what we do, what we're actually doing, the content of our digital media, by simply making different choices about what we're choosing, we can either enhance portions of our brain or diminish them.
Okay, I was looking at you were talking earlier about the different types of games. I was looking at some play, I think it was out of a Denmark. A company is developing some games that is as much action as the role-playing games, but designed to have positive effects, I presume, to help build that part of the brain you're talking about rather than diminish it. It seems like there's some exciting possibilities there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of people out there who are specifically designing games which they say are brain trainers. Now, unfortunately, a lot of brain training games don't actually hold up under examination. When you take a look and say, do these games actually accomplish what they say they do? Some of them actually don't. Whereas, interestingly enough, some games that weren't necessarily designed to be brain trainers do show that they stimulate and grow and improve executive function, creativity, and general brain functioning. One example of a game that wasn't designed to be a brain grower but turned out to be one is Portal 2. It's a game that requires you to think about life and physics in a very different way than you ever would. And it's the novelty, the constant problem solving and novelty, stimulates neurological growth and helps with executive function, perceptual reasoning, other things like that. But I think this is also a case of buyer beware, that there are a lot of people out there making claims about brain training games that aren't necessarily backed up by research, even though they say, hey, this game was designed with the help of a neuropsychologist.
I think
we need to be aware. Go ahead.
Yeah, is there any resource for the games that, like the Portal 2, that you could go to refer to, and maybe parents try to buy those games for their kids?
Boy, I wish there was a central resource. But as of now, there's not one that I'm aware of. There are a couple of categories of games which typically are shown to have better results. For example, games that fall under a category known as 4X, it's a specific type of strategy game. Or, for example, interestingly enough, a lot of racing-type games tend to show a lot of benefits from it. Mm-hmm. Or also real-time strategy games. Of course, with that, one of the things we have to be careful of is any time that you're engaging with a video game, there are also lots of aspects of video games which can have negative effects as well, anywhere from addictive potential to the way that they erode human empathy. And so the difficult thing is each game can kind of be a bit of a mixed bag with moderating and mitigating factors. And I would love for there to be a central place where parents can go to get educated and say, with this game, what are the risk factors? What are the potential benefits? I'm not aware of a central location. I'm hoping to eventually create one, but that's one of several big projects I've got on my calendar.
Well, yeah, I would be glad to help you get the word out if you ever get started on that. But you know, we've just about ran out of time, but I would like you to summarize the major takeaway from your thoughts for parents that are concerned about video games especially.
Absolutely. So the first thing we need to understand is that video games, smartphones, social media, and the internet, they do shape brains. The second thing we need to understand is that the most common ways of consuming them, the way most people use them, are actually resulting in a large number of negative changes to brains. For example, humans now on average have a shorter attention span than goldfish.
I heard that.
This is because of the way we consume social media. So we need to be aware that while we're hyper-developing certain aspects of our brains, we're underdeveloping other aspects, and that disparity causes all kinds of processing issues and difficulties in a wide number of areas. So one, we do need to have time limits. Two, we do need to work on developing our other aspects of ourselves besides those parts that are stimulated by our digital media. And three, when you look around yourself and say, I'm doing about what everyone else is doing, it probably is not within the realm of what's healthy. So that's the place to start when you're thinking about this particular topic.
Okay, well, we have to wrap it up. You might give a half a minute to Telos, that RTC that you work with, and the Telos U that's starting up this summer, and then contact information. If somebody wanted to talk to you more, how would they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So Telos is a residential treatment center located in Orem, Utah. We are designed to work with young men who experience any number of difficulties with the way they process information, anywhere from ADHD to autism spectrum disorders, low processing speed, working memory. So we've been working for a long time to develop a school setting and a therapeutic approach that helps these people learn to capitalize upon their strengths and adapt to the weaknesses that they have in those areas. So this late summer, early fall, we're opening a new program for young adults. Again, we're servicing that same general category and population, but also expanding a bit, recognizing that there are a lot of young adults who are having a hard time bridging the gap from teenage years into adulthood, and that there's no one-size-fits-all model to helping them find their spot they fit into the world. Maybe later we can talk more about that. But if people are interested in contacting me to learn more about Telos, Telos U, or digital technology, the best place to reach me is through my email, which is my first name, Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at Telos, T-E-L-O-S, R-T-C, .com. Or you can reach the Telos main office at 801-426-8800.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And we've unfortunately run out of time. And I think we're just starting on this, so we're going to have you back and follow through on some of these things. Well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking with Ryan Anderson. Incidentally, he's an author of Navigating the Cyberscape, and as he just explained, the therapist at Telos and clinical director at Telos U, upcoming. And we've been talking about changing your brain digitally. And thank you very much, Ryan, and you have a great day.
Thanks, Lon. You too.